That was for 8 hours without talking to anybody outside of the world. I didn't know what's happening, and they keep threatening me about me going to the jail without law.
Aside from being oppressive and dangerous, it's also quite incompetent and really quite dumb.
Supporters shouted out, "Thank you, Bradley, you're a hero," which seemed to upset the military police, who pulled him out of the courtroom pretty briskly.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Winning weddings win in Kiwi marriage equality, a gay reporter's husband is harassed at Heathrow, and Manning's latest revelation may test military mettle. Those stories and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Pam Marshall.
With NewsWrap, a roundup of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending August 24th, 2013. Natasha Vitale and Melissa Ray, who won an all-expenses-paid wedding through a local radio station, became the first same-gender couple in New Zealand to legally marry when they exchanged vows at a church in Auckland, the country's largest city, just before 9 a.m. on August 19th, the first day the South Pacific nation's new marriage equality law took effect. Lindley Bendel and Ali Wanakau exchanged vows at 30,000 feet on the same day during a wedding they had won from Air New Zealand, aboard a flight from Queenstown to Auckland. Modern Family actor Jesse Tyler Ferguson and the man he recently married, Justin Makita, joined the couple's three children as witnesses. According to the Washington Blade, more than 30 other Kiwi gay and lesbian couples tied the knot during the first hours on the first day that they could. New Zealand becomes the 14th country in the world to have opened civil marriage to same-gender couples.
Meanwhile, Tourism New Zealand sponsored the wedding of Paul McCarthy and Trent Candler, a gay Australian couple, in New Zealand's capital city of Wellington, though it won't be legally recognized back home. The pair told reporters that they wanted all Australians to be watching and every politician to pay attention. Larger-than-expected crowds in the thousands marched for Australian marriage equality in Melbourne and Brisbane on August 17th. Rallies are reportedly being planned for Sydney, Adelaide, and Perth leading up to the September 7th national elections. Marriage equality has been a prominent issue during the campaign. Ali Hogg of Australia's Equal Love campaign said that people would continue taking to the streets until marriage equality is the law of the land, adding that we shouldn't still be fighting for this basic human right in 2013.
A court in Santa Fe, the largest county in the U.S. state of New Mexico, ruled on August 22nd that civil marriage should be open to gay and lesbian couples. District Judge Sarah Singleton ordered the Santa Fe County Clerk to issue the license to a gay couple that had filed the lawsuit to get one, or appear in court on September 26th to explain why that hadn't happened. In her ruling, Singleton noted that the state constitution requires that equality of rights under law shall not be denied on account of the sex of any person. The state's marriage laws are gender neutral. The county clerk in Doña Ana, the state's second largest county, started offering marriage licenses to lesbian and gay couples in Las Cruces the day before. Lynn Ellens, who's also a lawyer, said that he decided to begin issuing the licenses after reviewing a legal opinion by Attorney General Gary King that denying civil marriage to same-gender couples violates the New Mexico Constitution. By week's end, more than 90 same-gender couples had received marriage licenses in southern New Mexico. Doña Ana Chief Deputy Clerk Mario Jimenez told reporters that Texas couples are traveling to the border region to also get married, even though they won't be legally recognized in the Lone Star State. Attorney General King, a Democrat, said he has no plans to act against the New Mexico marriages, but Republican state legislators are threatening to file a lawsuit to stop them.
Local officials are defying a specific Pennsylvania state law against it to marry gay and lesbian couples. Montgomery County, its third most populous county, located in the southeastern part of the state near Philadelphia, has issued more than 140 marriage licenses to same-gender couples since mid-July. The Pennsylvania Department of Health is suing County Register of Wills, D. Bruce Haynes, who said he wants to be on the right side of history, for authorizing them. Meanwhile, the American Civil Liberties Union is challenging the state law in court and Pennsylvania Attorney General Kathleen Kane is refusing to defend it. Oral arguments are scheduled to begin in early September.
The Liberty Council, a right-wing legal group, is suing the state of New Jersey after Republican Governor Chris Christie signed a bill on August 19th to ban so-called reparative therapy for minors. Its promoters claim that a combination of counseling and prayer can make gay people heterosexual. The law prohibits state-licensed professionals from practicing so-called sexual orientation conversion therapy on patients under the age of 18. Christie said in his signing statement that he believes people are born gay and, after citing numerous medical studies that such efforts often do more harm than good, that exposing children to these health risks without clear evidence of benefits that outweigh these serious risks is not appropriate. Liberty Council Chair Matt Staver called the legislation a tyrannical overreach of government authority. Liberty Council attorney Henry Myatt told a conservative Christian radio show that Christie had essentially declared war on the message of the gospel and that it was a sign of the power of the darkness in our time. Wayne Besson of the advocacy group Truth Wins Out told the Washington Blade that the Liberty Council filing is a frivolous lawsuit that confuses religious liberty with license to abuse LGBT youth. New Jersey is the second U.S. state, after California, to ban the use of reparative therapy on young people. The Liberty Council is also challenging the California law. The U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals issued an emergency injunction in January that had been requested by the Liberty Council to delay the law from taking effect.
Meanwhile, the Capital Resource Institute has filed papers for a referendum to overturn a new California law that protects transgendered teens. The law requires equal access for students in the state's public schools to programs and facilities that reflect their gender identity. But Capital Resource Institute Executive Director Karen England said that the measure, written by out Assemblyman Tom Amiano of San Francisco and signed into law by Governor Jerry Brown last week, would undermine parental choice and cause discomfort for students. She told the Sacramento Bee that, "We respect that some students are struggling with their own sexual identity, but we ask for respect for the other students who will be humiliated when a boy walks into the girls' locker room." Several Republican lawmakers harshly denounced the law, and one, Assemblyman Tim Donnelly of Twin Peaks, said he's pulling his children from public school. Equality California, the state's largest LGBT advocacy group, dismissed the referendum effort as a predictable move by fringe groups that oppose all pro-equality measures.
Germany will be the first country in the world to allow alternatives to male or female on birth certificates. If a baby is born intersex, that is, with sexual organ characteristics that are ambiguous, parents can register the baby's gender on the birth certificate as undetermined or unspecified. A European Commission report in 2011 said that at least 1 in 5,000 people on the continent identify as intersex. The German law takes effect on November 1st. Proponents say that it may reduce the number of parents who choose to have their infant's genitalia corrected surgically, which often causes severe psychological trauma in adulthood. Many intersex adults are deeply upset about the surgery performed on them as children and oppose surgical alteration before intersex people reach an age in which they can understand their gender identity and decide for themselves. Nepal and India each legally recognize a third gender, and Australia allows X on passports as an option to F or M.
The crossroads of Russia's anti-gay crackdown and the 2014 Winter Olympics in the Russian city of Sochi next February continued to make news this week. The International Olympic Committee received a letter on August 22nd from Russian Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Kozak, giving reassurances that the host country will fully comply with the Olympic Charter's provision against discrimination of any kind. But he said that Russia's new law criminalizing the promotion of non-traditional sexual relationships to minors, which virtually bans any public affirmation of LGBT rights, applies to everyone and therefore cannot be regarded as discrimination based on sexual orientation. Apparently satisfied, the IOC praised Kozak's letter, saying that it provided strong written reassurances from the Russian government that everyone will be welcome at the Games in Sochi, regardless of their sexual orientation. It remains unclear, however, what will happen to Olympic athletes or fans if they make statements or gestures that are considered to be gay propaganda. Offenses could include wearing a rainbow lapel pin or simply holding hands with someone of the same gender.
Russian President Vladimir Putin issued a new edict late this week that outlaws gatherings, rallies, demonstrations, marches, and pickets in Sochi and surrounding areas next February that are not connected with the Olympic Games. He described it as an anti-terrorism measure. Leading Russian activist Nikolai Alexeyev, who's also a lawyer, called Putin's latest anti-gay move unconstitutional in a tweet soon after the news broke, and promised that a gay pride parade would still be held during the Sochi Olympics.
And finally, as we reported last week, Swedish high jumper Emma Green-Trigaro and a few of her compatriots wore multicolored rainbow nail polish at the Moscow Athletic World Championships in mid-August as a way of protesting the Russian No Promo Homo law. She was accused almost immediately thereafter by the International Association of Athletics Federation, track and field's major governing body, of violating its code of conduct. The Swedish Athletics Federation released a statement acknowledging that the code of conduct prohibits any commercial or political statements during the competition and that we have informed our athletes about this. Green-Trigaro said in a subsequent interview that she had now decided to paint my nails red instead, for love.
That's News Wrap for the week ending August 24th, 2013. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org. where you can also read the text of this newscast. I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
Bradley is jailed, but Chelsea is set free later in the program. Investigative reporter Glenn Greenwald's sexual orientation was not a salient point in his journalistic drama working with U.S. National Security whistleblower Edward Snowden. Not until Greenwald's husband was detained by British authorities this week. Brazilian David Miranda was returning to the couple's home in Rio from Berlin, where he'd been visiting Greenwald's associate, documentarian Laura Poitras. Officers at Heathrow Airport checked Miranda's passport and then escorted him to a private room where he was informed that he was being held under England's Terrorism Act of 2000. All of his electronic devices were confiscated, laptop, memory sticks, even video game console. When the couple appeared on CNN's Anderson Cooper 360, Miranda said that he was asked about many things, including his family and friends and his relationship with Greenwald. Miranda said that the actual subject of the terrorism law never came up.
They didn't ask me anything about terrorism, not one question about it. And I think it's really weird because I was in there for like 8 hours without talking to anybody outside. And like they're just like, keep me, I have to ask them, do I have to answer this? And they asked, just telling me, like, if you don't answer this, you're going to go to jail. And you know, that's a big thing because like when they say like, that I was in this under this law, this is terrorism. You know what UK and United States do. They have all the powers in the world to do anything they want with this, because I've been following Glenn and his career for the past like 8 years, and I have seen many stories that people are pick up in the different countries, get into this Guantanamo Island and just like stay in the prison and they have vanished. Nobody's seen them. So in that moment, I was like really afraid what would happen to me.
Sure.
And I was, you understand that I was for 8 hours without talking to anybody outside of the world. I didn't know what's happening. And they keep threatening me about me going to the jail without law.
And Glenn, you got a call from some British official who wouldn't give you his name, just his identification number. What did that person say was happening with David?
The very first thing that he said to me was that he was detained under the Terrorism Act of 2000, which is an obviously terrorizing thing to hear. about the person that you love most in the world and with whom you share your life. And I then asked how long he had been detained. He said he had been detained by that point already 3 hours, which made me know it was much more than a routine secondary screening in immigration. I asked whether I could speak with him or have a lawyer from the Guardian sent in, and they said you cannot speak with him and he does not have the right to have a lawyer present with him. I asked them what their intentions were as far as how long he would be held, and they said they had no idea, and that was all they would tell me.
David, I know you had said that they took a laptop, memory sticks, an external hard drive, your cell phone, and more. Do you know what were stored on those devices? Was there classified material?
I don't know that. I mean, I was just taking those materials back to Glenn. I mean, you know, Glenn been working with a lot of stories along the years. I didn't quite follow everything that he writes every day. I can't follow him because I have to have a life. And I mean, I can't know everything that he's been working with.
So David had visited this filmmaker that your reporting partner on the NSA stories, Laura Poitras, and in Berlin. I read yes. The Guardian had paid for David's flights. Glenn, was he carrying classified material with him?
Well, I'm not going to talk about what he was carrying because that's our work product as journalists. Remember, both Laura and I are working with The Guardian as journalists. What I would say is every single newsroom in the United States, every single major news organization in the world has classified information. Reporting on what governments do in the secret is what journalism is about. So if you want to support the idea that states can just go and confiscate from journalists classified information, you should be demanding that your government go physically into newsrooms and seize whatever classified information is there. All of the best reporting over the last 40 years involves journalists having classified information. The Pentagon Papers, the Bush torture sites, CIA black sites, the illegal warrantless eavesdropping program, that's what investigative journalism is. And if you want to start criminalizing that, it means that you're asking as a citizen to be kept ignorant and to allow people in power to conceal what they're doing behind a wall of secrecy and to have no accountability or transparency. Journalism is not a crime and it is not terrorism.
I would also imagine that any information that David might have had was likely duplicated, backed up someplace else. So confiscating it, it's not like that would make it simply disappear, which then I guess leads to your argument that this was to intimidate you and send a message to others.
What they did is ludicrous. First of all, of course we have multiple copies of every single thing that we're working on. Nobody would ever travel with only one copy of anything. Even if you just lose it or it's stolen, that would be inane. Of course we have multiple copies around the world in different places. So taking it is in no way accomplishing anything. Secondly, every single thing that both David and I carry, even personal items, things for his school, are protected by very advanced and heavy forms of encryption, which they can't access. So taking it doesn't enable them to know what's in there either. It's not going to stop our reporting. It doesn't do them any good. All it did, as I said this week, is give them a huge black eye in the world, make them look thuggish and authoritarian, interfering in the journalism process, creating international incidents with the government of Brazil, which is indignant over what was being done, for no benefit at all to themselves, which is why I said I truly believe they'll come to have regret to regret what they've done, because aside from being oppressive and dangerous, it's also quite incompetent and really quite dumb.
Investigative journalist Glenn Greenwald and his husband David Miranda were guests on CNN's Anderson Cooper 360.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Have you checked our website lately? For now playing information and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, log on to thiswayout.org.
The sentencing of U.S. Army Private Bradley Manning was one of two momentous announcements in the case of the convicted WikiLeaker this week. Military Judge Denise Lind ordered Manning to serve 35 years in prison, forfeit pay and benefits, and be dishonorably discharged. Manning will be required to serve at least a third of the jail time before being eligible for parole. The whistleblower formally declared the intention to make a gender transition the following day, which is why Manning is still referred to as male in this report about the sentencing by Free Speech Radio news anchor Dorian Marina.
Manning's lawyer, David Coombs, said the sentencing created a chill for future whistleblowers.
This does send a message, and it's a chilling one, and it's endorsed at the very highest levels. Now, this administration has gone after more whistleblowers than the previous ones combined. Hopefully we change that in the near future.
Coombs said the punishment was disproportionate and that some of his past clients, including those who have committed murder and molestation, received less time. He said the government's charge that WikiLeaks directed Manning to release the documents was unfounded.
The idea that WikiLeaks or Julian Assange or anyone else forced my client to do anything or asked him to do anything is just pure fabrication. Julian Assange and WikiLeaks are no different than any other journalist. And had PFC Manning reached out to one of you, I think he would have given you the information. And hopefully you wouldn't be treated any differently.
Coombs said Manning could be eligible for parole in 7 years and that he would continue working on several issues related to this case, including pushing for a pardon and ensuring soldiers in prison get access to treatment for what is classified as gender dysphoria. He also wants to challenge RCM 806, the military policy which limits the public's access to court martials. Manning's disclosures constituted the largest government leak in U.S. history and revealed details of the U.S. wars abroad that contradicted the official portrayal from government sources, including details on killings of civilians and journalists in Iraq, U.S.-trained paramilitary groups in Afghanistan, prisoner abuse and torture, and information about Guantanamo detainees. Manning's release of diplomatic cables showed an unvarnished look at U.S. foreign policy across the world, including the drone killing program in Yemen, U.S. training of security forces in Egypt, and policies in Haiti, Tunisia, Libya, and numerous other countries. Supporters for Manning launched a campaign today to pressure President Obama to pardon him. They've also started a fund to enable Manning to attend college when he is released from prison. For more, we're joined by Adam Klasfeld. He's a reporter with Courthouse News and has been covering the Manning trial. He joins us from Fort Meade, Maryland. First, describe the scene at the courthouse when the judge read the sentencing this morning.
We were in a packed, very small courtroom, and completely filled with Manning supporters, with press. Manning's aunt and sister were in the front row, along with the wife of the attorney, David Coombs. Manning remained expressionless, did not let on what he was feeling during a very, very brief hearing. It lasted a matter of seconds, if not a few minutes. The judge basically warned the spectators not to shout anything out. After he read out the sentence of 35 years, a gasp was heard from the gallery. And at the end of the hearing, the supporters shouted out things like, "Thank you, Bradley, you're a hero," which seemed to upset the military police who grabbed him out and pulled him out of the courtroom pretty briskly.
The military prosecution was seeking 60 years, asking the judge to consider it a deterrence and specifically telling the court to send a message to other soldiers contemplating releasing classified information. In that short period of time, did the judge mention an intention at deterrence in the sentence?
One of the things about the hearing, there was no explanation given. Typically in federal courthouses, you'll hear a judge mention things about deterrence or explaining the ruling in some way. Not so in a military trial. It was very brief, very formal. She announced his reduction in rank to private, from private first class, and gave the year of the sentence, and that was that. It was over in a flash.
Manning has already spent nearly 1,300 days in confinement. That included abusive treatment while in military custody. Will that enter into his time served?
Yes, it will. From the time that he spent in pretrial confinement and for the sentencing credit for unlawful pretrial punishment, it adds up to nearly 4 years, and that will be reduced from his sentence. In addition, there is eligibility for parole that can kick in as soon as he's finished about a third of his sentence, and that means that Manning could be out of prison before his 40th birthday.
So let's get into what comes next. Manning was convicted of 20 charges, including charges under the Espionage Act. What is the appeals process from here?
The appeals process is automatic. It starts at the Army Court of Criminal Appeals. Of course, the Manning's Convening Authority, which is the military equivalent of a lead prosecutor, U.S. attorney, can look at the case, can commute it. There is a separate parole process and commutation process. After the Army Court of Appeals, it can move on to the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces, which is the highest military court, and then ultimately even up to the Supreme Court.
And what about the issue of harm to the U.S.? Much of the court proceedings, including testimony from witnesses, has been kept secret. But from what has been made public, the prosecution has not provided specific examples of how the leaks caused harm to the U.S. How could this issue of harm and damage influence future appeals?
In terms of the appellate process, I'm sure the appellate courts will be looking at the both the classified and the unclassified evidence. The last time I submitted an inquiry into the Military District of Washington after the government sentencing case, the case file was about 35,000 pages of unclassified court docket and 5,000 pages of classified. So that means about 1/8 of this trial has been kept in secrecy, which means in 3 months of trial, the public hasn't heard about the effect the leaks had on the Arab Spring, drone warfare in Yemen, military contractors in Afghanistan. These issues were not raised in open court. So I think that the effect of secrecy on trial could play a role in the appeals process and almost certainly will play a role in the court of public opinion.
That was Courthouse News reporter Adam Klassfeld speaking with Dorian Marina. Manning's attorney David Coombs subsequently appeared on NBC TV's Today Show with the convicted whistleblower's public coming out trans statement. Manning's new first name is Chelsea, and the issue of her receiving hormone therapy in military prison may set a new legal precedent. Federal prisons and most state agencies provide necessary medical treatment for gender dysphoria. Courts have found in favor of prisoners in such cases based on the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. But Pentagon spokespeople have hinted that treatment may be denied to Manning. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Wenzel Jones, Pam Marshall, and Jen Mahoney contributed program material. Thanks also to Dorian Marina and Free Speech Radio News. Sly and the Family Stone performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is funded by the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and our generous listeners. Check out thiswayout.org for more information, weekly updates, news wrap transcripts, and links to our podcast, blog, and Facebook page. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WSUI, Iowa City, Iowa, CJMP, Powell River, British Columbia, KZYXNZ, Fort Bragg, Philo, Willits, and Ukiah, California, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station, and we're going to all stay tuned.